Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rain. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors and 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out of Kankakee and rolls along the houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name and freight yards full of old black men and the graveyards of the rusted automobile. Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done, dealing card games with the old man in the club car. Penny a point and no one keeping score. Pass the paper bags out, hold the bottle. Feel the wheels grumbling neath the floor. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpet made of steel. Mothers with their faces sweet, rocking to that gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they see. Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans, changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home, we'll be there by morning, through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream, and the steel rails still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his song again. The passengers will please refrain. This train's got the disappearing railroad blues. Good morning, America, how are you? Said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
I love those old train songs by Hank Snow. Hank Snow is a great singer. He's from Canada. A lot of people don't know that. Anyhow, he sang a whole lot of train songs, and you know that's something the system's robbed us of. We no longer have good train service, especially in the white areas of the country. And we don't have bus service anymore either. In the white areas of the country. They dropped, they dropped 200 or 300 stops a year or so ago. No, it's about 5 years ago. Terrible Tommy here. Well, my daddy worked on the Pennsylvania Railroad, my stepfather, and he also worked on the nickel plate. And he did several different jobs for the railroad. And one job that's disappeared forever, and that is the manual gate crossing situation. They had these little houses that were about 6 by 6 by about 8 feet tall. They were up about, I'd say about 30 feet from the ground by the railroad track, by the railroad crossing. And when the train came, it was his duty to let down the gates and then take the gates up when they went through. But that job was long ago gone. But they still kept one here in the town I live in. One of those little cabins that they set in there and watch for the train. They put it downtown and kept it. It's not up in the air anymore, but You can go look at it if you ever come through Warsaw. Yeah. Okay, Terrible Tommy here. Terrible Tommy in the bunker. And it's a cool day. We've had two or three cool days and windy days. Boy, I'm telling you, we've had some wild wind. I'm telling you, two or three days ago, they had it came through here in waves. Snow, sleet, ice, and 30-mile-an-hour winds. And it would go through, and then about half an hour later, another wave would come through here. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. Now, that happened three or four times, that super high winds and snow and everything. It's Mother Nature's pissed off. She's pissed off, so watch out. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, and I've given you new instructions on how to send your money with a new outfit we've got, hell with PayPal, and it's listed on the form I send out to you, so try it, and if you have problems, just get in touch with the webmaster, merchandiseresist@yahoo.com. And because we're just starting this up, so. Or you can do the old-fashioned way, you know, cash, money order, check, your firstborn. We'll take about anything, man. Well, this old phony election system is heating up. It's heating up. I notice on the right-wing radio stations now, the Trumpers and the Cruisers, they're getting pretty pissed off at each other. And I think before this is over, there are going to be some fistfights. There's some shenanigans been played at the state level, too. The boys that are entrenched, the high rollers, they want to still keep control of the Republican Party. And they're having a little trouble. They got a lot of boys getting pissed off and rising up. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun as time goes on. I got two signs up in front of my house. One is Drone Hillary, and the other one is With Cruz You Lose. Have you seen Cruz's father? You know, it's Cuban. I don't know how dark he is, but I heard him, first time I've heard him say anything, he was on the radio this morning on his right-wing show. Breitbart, who don't allow anybody to say anything about race. No, don't try to get on Breitbart. Because they're 100% against anybody who's racist or racial separatist. In fact, do you hear hardly anything about race? You know, I have to go to the black radio station. The black commentators talk more about race than the whites, a lot more. Well, I see the pro-white nationalists fought another battle over in Dover, England with the, what do you call them? I don't know. They call themselves anti-fascist, but really, what's this fascist thing? That's from World War II. I don't know of any fascist party or anybody around here that calls themselves a fascist. I wouldn't care if they did. They can call themselves whatever they want, but I don't see it. But anyhow, the cops are actually keeping the right-wingers under control and back from where they want to be, and letting these progressive radical leftists go right down through the town. And there's another outfit over there in Europe that is anti-immigrant and anti-invader, and they the cops pushed them right on down past the main part of town, clear down in a warehouse area where nobody could hear him give a speech or anything. It's going to end up being the common people, the white people, against the system and the cops, which is, that's okay with me. If that's the way it has to be, the cops better just get out of the road, because God damn it, the whites are getting pissed off, and they're not going to put up with that forever. They said it was the National Front that was marching over there. I did not know that the National Front was still in business. I supported the National Front way back, you know. Way, way back. In fact, that's how I got in touch and got to know the skinheads, was through the National Front. Yeah, that's how I got together with the skinheads. But I'm going to tell you, they're going to have to get some strategy going to fight these loonies, left-wing types. They're going to have some strategy, have to have some strategy to let them know they're around. If they don't have any strategy or techniques, they're going to continue to get mobbed and have rocks thrown at them and everything else. They've got to do some damage to these people on the left. I hope they do. I hope they've got some good leaders over there that can teach these people strategy in the streets and methods of handling their opposition in the streets. If they don't have that, they're going to get screwed. There's plenty of that information in cop manuals and military manuals on crowd control and street situations. But in the past, most of the right wing never, I don't think they ever read any of those books. So they got their ass beat half the time, because there's never as many of our kind of people out there in the streets as there are the rabble. And that's just like in Berlin in the early 30s, when the cops were against the brown shirts and the communists were against the brown shirts. Everybody was against the brown shirts, and they were out there in the street brawling. And they got serious. I mean, they had guns and everything. And a lot of those so-called lefties got taken care of.
Chicago Police Department controversy. It concerns racist comments made on a police radio. Who made them? Tonight, NBC5's Natalie Martinez is live at City Hall with much more. Natalie?
Allison, it appears that the transmissions came from Morgan Park in the far south side, but the big question is, who's speaking on them? OEMC says it's an unauthorized user, but at least one activist says he thinks that's a lie. The offensive comments were discovered over the weekend, seemingly broadcast on Chicago police radio frequency.
Find out what radio that comment came from.
You know, we don't get radio numbers, but I'm already hollering for my supervisor.
Oh, Black Lives Matter, man.
Community leaders and seniors from King College Prep gathered outside City Hall today to call on the mayor to find out and fire whoever's responsible.
So to hear that over radios across the city that people are disrespecting us in such a manner is unbelievable.
They appear to be racist comments involving CPD. But OEMC says it's reviewed the audio, doesn't believe they were made on a city-programmed radio because they lack characteristics of an official police radio. Chicago Police told NBC5 in a statement that it was made aware of inappropriate transmission and that they're absolutely unacceptable. The superintendent ordering an immediate internal affairs investigation, adding, should the investigation reveal that a member of the police department made the statements, he will be immediately suspended and disciplinary proceedings will be launched. Tonight, this group is also worried about the bigger, uglier picture.
What that transmission represents is the systemic racism that's going on and that's present in the Chicago Police Department.
The mayor's office told us in part that Rahm Emanuel is eager for the results of that investigation and for the individual to be held accountable. We're live outside City Hall. Natalie Martinez, NBC 5 News. Rob?
We'll stay on it.
Evidently, there's on police radio things like fucking nigger, and things like that. Well, I want to congratulate you, Lone Wolves in Chicago, for pulling that off. And the Negroes are going crazy. You can't talk like that around here. We're gonna get you and do something bad to you because we're a superior bunch of people. And that wasn't the Black Ku Klux Klan. No, they handle things differently. I think that was the real Ku Klux Klan. I don't know, but I know it was pretty cool. Yeah, there's plenty of used cop radios around. Yeah, you can probably buy them at a garage sale. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't do it, but I'm not unhappy about it. Mayor Rahm Emanuel has sent a letter to the Cook County State's Attorney, Anita Alvarez, and the U.S. Attorney, Zachary Fardone, asking them to open a hate crime investigation into the racial slurs broadcast on Chicago police frequencies. Investigators say that the transmissions are being made by a private citizen or citizens with non-city issued equipment. Well, do we have a militia in Chicago? The language used and the racial intolerance expressed do not represent the values of our police department or our city. I'll bet you it represents the opinion of a lot of cops, Emanuel wrote. We are at our best when we hold ourselves to the highest standards of never saying nigger. The first incident occurred on March 13th when a conversation between police officers and the dispatchers at a 911 call center was interrupted by an unknown individual, probably a white racist neo-Nazi, who repeatedly used racial slurs like nigger, moon cricket, and a whole bunch of others. There have been at least three subsequent incidents, and they ain't caught them yet. I love it. I love it. Let's see here. Here's more Chicago news. Already facing misdemeanor tax charges, former black U.S. Representative Mel Reynolds could be in more legal trouble after failing to return to Chicago from Africa on Thursday. I ain't coming back there, Ben. I took the money, but I ain't coming back. I'm staying here in Africa. On Wednesday, U.S. District Judge John Darrow declined Reynolds' attorney's request to delay his tax evasion trial about 10 years, slated to begin next month. So, Mel, you better stay down there in Africa. If you come back up here to Chicago, you're going to be in real trouble.
Judge John Darrow yesterday refused to delay Mel Reynolds' misdemeanor tax evasion case and said he wanted to be informed if he didn't return to Chicago today as agreed. Reynolds is in South Africa with his 22-year-old daughter who's dealing with some health issues. He says he couldn't abandon her and is doing what any parent would do.
The question I think comes up, why are they so crazy, so adamant to go forward on a misdemeanor case when the circumstances dictate that? How would a continuance hurt the criminal justice system?
The court and the prosecution, he says, are taking a hard line, ignoring the fact that he has a sick child, and he suggests there's an element of racism at play. Mike Krauser, News Radio on 105.9 FM.
What the hell? He had a daughter. She's sick, and that was the closest witch doctor he could find was in South Africa. He called an 800 number, got her fixed up with a witch doctor down there. So that's it. You're being unfair. Unfair to Mel. Damn it.
Should have enough, mind to think. When he hears that, he goes.
A lot of these kids feel disconnected from their families, their peers, which is pretty normal, frankly, for teenagers anywhere. But Mohammed Mohamud says that kind of isolation is amplified in immigrant families.
Sometime a father came to me and he said, I am a Somali and I have an American kid in my home. Yes, I'm an American citizen, but what I mean is that we don't understand each other. Families who came to me, they say, for example, my kid doesn't talk to me. He is, or she is, or he is, whatever, close his or her door, immediately when they come to the house. I don't know what they do. The kids, I don't say that they are assimilated fully, but they are somewhere in the middle. They doesn't have their original culture, they didn't get to the assimilation fully. They are so middle.
The Obama administration has put a lot of time and energy into thinking about what they call countering violent extremism. And one of the big conclusions is that the federal government needs to invest in local communities. So there's a new pilot program. The DOJ is giving money to community groups in Los Angeles, Boston, and Minneapolis. In total, six groups in Minnesota that work with Somali youth will share about $300,000 in grants. Andrew Luger is the U.S. attorney for Minnesota.
The whole community, in my meetings, really believed that with certain resources and the right programming and partnerships with established nonprofits that could lift up this community and help it fight terror recruiting.
Mahmoud Noor and Mohamed Mohamoud both run organizations that got these federal grants. And they're tackling the issues from two perspectives, focusing on the kids, but also their parents. One challenge is technology. Parents often don't understand it, which is a problem because it can also be a place where kids are targeted by ISIS.
Well, them Somalis just don't have a chance, man. Somalis. I try to talk to them. I think they're assimilated, but I don't know. They don't act assimilated. I don't understand. I got an American in my house. Yeah, he's black just like me, but he's a Somalian, but he's a Somali-American. And we can't communicate, man. We need some money from the government, and they said they're going to send me $300,000 to help me communicate with my kid. That's nice of Obama, isn't it? He's a sweet man. He's the sweetest nigger I know. Well, in Los Angeles, the father, this Middle Eastern father, got upset with his kid because of his sexual orientation. Police worked, he's being charged with a hate crime. Police worked the scene where a man was found shot to death and a woman fatally stabbed Tuesday in Los Angeles. A man charged with fatally shooting his 29-year-old son had repeatedly threatened to kill him over his sexual orientation. He was a homosexual, prosecutors say. Amir Issa was found shot to death just outside the family home on Tuesday while the Los Angeles Police County District Attorney's Office charged father Shahida Issa on Friday with murder as a hate crime in his son's death. Investigators on Saturday still were trying to determine responsibility for a second killing at the home discovered by police the same time, that of Amir's mother. Police spokesman Officer Mike Lopez said, well, there you go. Yeah, those Middle Easterners seem to know how to handle their homosexual offspring. Wow, man. Well, let's see what's on the pessimist guide to history again here. Wow. It's terrible, terrible. 1856. Deadly gunpowder magazine explosion. On April the 3rd, a lightning bolt struck the Church of St. John. You see? I think God hates churches. On the island of Rhodes, the church used by occupying Ottoman army to store huge quantities of gunpowder blew up in a tremendous explosion that killed about 4,000 people. We've heard this gunpowder story before. Yeah. Well, what do they care? They were Muslims, the Ottomans, you know, store the gunpowder in a Christian church. How about that? 1857, earthquake and fire ravaged Tokyo. On March 21st, a violent earthquake shook the Japanese city of Tokyo and the surrounding region. The quake itself killed thousands. But that was only the beginning of the destruction that struck the sprawling metropolis. Fires broke out soon after the earthquake and began spreading among the highly flammable paper and wood homes in which most Japanese lived. 60-mile-per-hour winds suddenly began whipping the fires into a fast-moving wall of flame. Fire killed nearly all the 107,000 people who died in the disaster. That's pretty wild, man. 1857, the Sepoy Mutiny. 100 years after the British established their supremacy in India, dissatisfaction with colonial rule had become widespread, especially among the British Army's native troops known as the Sepoys. Offended by the British Army's introduction of cow and pig fat to grease rifle cartridges, Bengali soldiers in the British garrison at Meerut finally rebelled on May 10th and seized Delhi. Delhi's a city in India. The mutiny spread quickly, soon involving some 80,000 native soldiers and the general populace as well. That's what shows you that occupation is not a good thing. Many British officers and their families were slaughtered by the rebels. In one case, more than 200 British women and children were assembled in a house and brutally hacked to death with swords and machetes. The bodies were dismembered and mutilated before being tossed into a well. You don't take your women off to war. That's the first thing to remember. Your women and kids stay out of the area where there might be trouble. The British moved to send in reinforcements, but travel from England was slow. Yeah, to India? Yeah, right. Soldiers en route to China were detoured to India. Others were sent from England in ships on the long voyage around the Cape of Good Hope. Thus, it was not until 1858 that the British succeeded in putting down the rebellion. Soon after, the British government took direct control of the government in India. Ending rule by the British East India Company. See, there's your predatory capitalists. The revolt was a result of a clash of social and religious systems. The British instituted reforms in their own rigid way, and the Hindus, particularly of highest castes, resisted. They, of course, had the most to lose. That kind of thing don't work out. Never works out too long. 1857, the tragic fate of the Central America. A furious hurricane racked the side-wheeling steamer Central America on one day after it left Havana. Well, there's a lot of ships got in trouble around Havana, Cuba, for New York City on September 8th. The ship's 474 passengers, including many miners returning from the California gold fields by way of Panama. There were some 3 tons of gold bars and coins aboard worth up to $1 billion today. Wow. Wonder if anybody's ever found that one. Serious troubles began when the ship started filling with water from a leak in the hull and from waves crashing over the decks. Passengers and crew bailed all night, but it was not enough. The ship's engine eventually failed, and she drifted helplessly for 4 days while the storm raged. Finally, on September the 12th, women and children were put aboard lifeboats for transfer to a nearby ship. Just as the last lifeboat left, an enormous wave crashed over the ship, sending it spinning down to the bottom, about 160 miles off the South Carolina coast. Lightning flashes revealed scores of survivors struggling for their lives in the dark, violent sea, but only 153 of the 575 passengers and crew aboard the ship were saved. Well, I'll tell you, they should have taken a plane. The hoard of gold aboard the Central America attracted the attention of treasure hunters, naturally, but the sunken wreck under a mile and a half of water was not located until 1987, whereupon ownership of the salvage rights became tangled in legal claims of insurance companies, salvage groups, and others. It was not until 1990 that a federal judge awarded the gold to the salvage group that had discovered the sunken treasure. That seems fair. 1857, Russian warship sinks in storm. The 84-gun Russian warship Lefort sank in a storm in the Gulf of Finland on September 23rd, taking 826 crewmen and passengers. to the bottom. 1858, fire wrecks London docks, apparently caused by the spontaneous combustion of materials stored in the warehouses. A great fire broke out in the London docks on June 29th. Flames spread to a number of adjoining warehouses, one of which exploded after saltpeter inside it ignited. Some $2 million in damages was reported. Wow. Many of you may have heard or may know of Revlo P. Oliver. If you haven't, he's one of the greatest thinkers that our race has produced in a long time. He's now passed away. I like to cover some of the stories he wrote about, and here's one I found interesting. When abortion is a crime, all simpletons know there ain't no difference between races, but nevertheless, female congoids commonly become puberate when they're 9 years old. A few years ago in Chicago, one specimen, perhaps a little precocious, being barely nine and in an advanced stage of pregnancy, was mentioned in the local press because she had been raped by her uncle and had been taken to a hospital where she would be aborted. Immediately, a passel of men, women of all species, that is so stupid that it permits itself to be taxed for the comfort of the congoids and to accelerate their breeding, assembled outside the hospital, protest what they called a crime. They wailed that old Jesus had injected a soul into this precious fetus and destined it to grow up to afflict white boobs like themselves. Whether old Jesus had also incited the rape was not clear. Perhaps that question did not occur to their clotted minds. There is one instance in which a similar abortion would have been a crime against humanity. Whether it occurred or not, I unfortunately do not know. The Weekly World News is given to sensationalism, but unlike more respected newspapers, it never, so far as is known, invents the stories it publishes. In its issue for 20 December, it stated that a 15-year-old female congoid in Kenya was pregnant and would give birth normally in January. She said she had been raped by a baboon. There was obviously something wrong with that story, because as everybody knows, male baboons have many activities to occupy their time and to hold their interest, becoming sexually aroused only when a female in oestrus presents herself to them and solicits fecundation. According to the obstetrician's report, however, there was ample proof that the child in the womb had been endangered by a baboon. He had a priori believed such an event impossible, because, as you know, baboons are not apes, they are monkeys, and therefore father remained farther removed from the human species, having diverged from the evolutionary line much earlier than the gorillas, orangutans, or chimpanzees. He was, however, convinced that the young woman was impregnated by a baboon. We are certain a child in the womb is not entirely human. It has the facial features of a baboon and appears to be covered with thick black hair. Quote, God only knows, he added, how it will behave after it is born. The infant may be weak and helpless like a human, or it may swing from the chandeliers, unquote. Obviously, the infant was one that should properly arouse the solicitude of all intelligent persons, and the pregnant mother and her child, when born, deserve an utmost care, since it was a phenomenon that would provide crucial data about the genetics of anthropoids. There were suggestions of abortion, although an abortion in the eighth month of pregnancy would endanger the life of the mother. I do not know whether the nitwits who demonstrated in Chicago would have been certain that Jesus had been at work in Kenya, thus making the semi-baboon sacred as a future customer for holy men, but aborting it would have been a crime against mankind, preventing our race from obtaining scientific information of the utmost value on a crucial matter. Unfortunately, I do not know what happened in Nairobi, unless the reader who kindly sent me this article I have cited overlooked a subsequent article item in the Weekly World News. There was no report in the American press, for the New York Times and similar publications well know why American boobs should not be allowed to learn that a female congoid can be conceived by baboons. Baboons, as I have said, are monkeys, and that is what made the pregnancy in Kenya so astonishing. It has long been believed that human females could conceive by gorillas. One apparent hybrid, named Julia Pastrana, became quite famous in the middle of the 19th century. See the article by Alan Callahan in Liberty Bell Publications. The author justly observed that although she exhibited human intelligence, the fact that her child, sired by the man who virtually owned her, closely resembled her collaborates, the opinion that she had been endangered by an ape. In January 1976, a similar creature, evidently part gorilla or orangutan, was purchased for $8,000 by an attorney in New York named Michael Miller, who thought it a capital investment from which he intended to profit. I do not know what happened. If any reader of these pages knows of what the result of the highly significant pregnancy in Kenya, I shall be grateful for the information. Now here's a couple of footnotes to that article. The reproductive systems and procedures of human females of the higher races, at least, differ greatly from those of other primates, thus raising a physiological question that you may wish to consider. Footnote number 2. The physician was, of course, exaggerating to make his point. Infant baboons require considerable less care from their mothers, often assisted by other females in the band, before they are ready to scamper about. But it is true that they develop more rapidly than do infant congoids, who in turn develop much more rapidly than infant caucasoids, and no doubt Mongolians. There are further differences between the white races and the sub-races, and some indications that Nordic infants develop the most slowly of all. Hold it. One more footnote to that. Mr. Callahan saw this as a crucial datum to be weighed against the report that the creature was born in Mexico, where there are no gorillas or any other apes suitable for paternity. The truly horrible science of teratology has been largely limited to recording the appearance of anthropoid monsters without ascertaining the genetic causes. The best known examples of the monstrous birth are the so-called Siamese twins, and some of the most shocking deformities is found in what they may be called uncompleted Siamese twins. The individual who may live to become an adult is born with some organs that are evidently part of a twin that for the same reason cease to develop further. Some creatures that have been exhibited like Julia as partly simian have probably been deformed mulattas or mestizos. There you go. Now this article I may have read before, but I'm not sure, and I think it's important, called Aryan Socialism. Quote, of this economic stoicism of the classical world, the exact antithesis is socialism, meaning thereby not Marx's theory, but Frederick William I's Prussian practice, which long preceded Marx and will yet displace him. The socialism inwardly akin to the system of the old Egypt that comprehends and cares for permanent economic relations, trains the individual in his duty to the whole, and glorifies hard work as an affirmation of time and future. quote, men are tired to discuss of the money economy. They hope for salvation from somewhere or other for some real thing of honor and chivalry, of inward nobility, of unselfishness and duty. And now dawns the time when the form-filled powers of the blood, which the rationalism of the megalopolis has suppressed, reawakens in the depths. Everything in the order of dynastic tradition and old nobility that has saved itself up for the future, everything that is of high money disdaining ethic, everything that is intrinsically sound enough to be, in Frederick the Great's words, the servant, the hard-working, self-sacrificing, caring servant of the state, all that I have described in one word as socialism, is contrast to capitalism. All this becomes suddenly the focus of immense life forces. That was from Spengler's works. We Aryans realize the age of capitalism and its stooge democracy is just about over. Western culture has evolved into the megalopolitan civilization. We're beset by political parties, press and media, the parties in the pocket of the Jewish money, the press and the media and the mouthpieces of Jewish money. Jewish money talks and rules in American society today. At this juncture, it is inevitable that Caesarism will crush the sham democracy, which is permitted to amass by the money power in order to organize them into easily fleeced tax herds. The masses have no choice. So locked into the system are they with the greed of the monetary gain. But to play the game of phony election politics, of voting for Tweedle candidates who espouse disastrous policies and who tell the sort of lies that the masses prefer to hear. Down this road, the masses will travel just once. Caesarism waits at the end, which for the Roman proletariat meant bread and circuses, but which the white men of this age will mean mongrelization in the one-world corporate system. There's nothing honorable in being forced to join an ant heap. Those who rule the megalopolis see no need for separate races and divergent cultures. Exploit and extirpate. These will be the motives of the new Caesars. But the Aryan does not have to share this fate. He can throw off the cult of money and greed for gain. Money has become an idol and the sole reason for the existence of all too many Aryans. Children are either not begot or quickly thrown aside by the parents in pursuit of things. The state has become the symbol of this greed, causing millions of the non-white unwashed to come to these shores seeking enrichment. When the Aryan racial state, the National Socialist Government of Germany, existed, the world's unwashed did not seek asylum there. It was understood that the NS state existed for the building up of the Aryan race and not for the exploitation by world of finance. Wherever money and finance rule, the state appears to the crows, gulls, and vultures like a great stinking landfill, where the caring servant of the Aryan people is the shepherd who guides the state. There are permitted no opportunities for parasites to feed from the life and blood of the Aryan race. This is Aryan socialism we support. It had nothing to do with money or phony party politics. Neither is it an ideology which Marx, Engels, and Lenin made of what they called socialism. Aryan socialism is a racial ethic, a soul force. Marxism is a Jewish exploitation of the frustration the people feel against capitalism, also a Jewish motive so as to get the wealth of the state and the people's lives into the Jewish hands. Jewish capitalism robs the people. Then Jewish Marxists come in and enslave them. It is not true socialism. True socialism existed long before Marx in the soul of the Gothic Europe. It was the underlying motive behind the old regimes. That series of European governesses which held sway before the Jewish Revolution against the French in 1789, emancipated and power and authority of usury, the prime tool of Jewish exploitation. The socialism we see as Aryan caring is first and foremost thoughtful of the Aryan race. It exists to nurture and protect, not to exploit, but to raise up. Call it Aryan racialism, if you prefer. It is the racial glue which binds the Aryan race together. The Jews gave the Aryans the idol of money to worship, which brought on the orgy of atomism, every man for himself. Aryan socialism once again ties the race together, forbidding the exploitation of our people and punishing racial treason committed against the Aryan race. In Aryan socialism, no Aryan need fear of the loss of property rights or individual immunities against government persecution. Every other ism, capitalism, communism, conservatism, liberalism, exists to either exploit the weaknesses of the Aryans or to use the non-white masses against the traditions, the Aryans as a battering ram. Aryan socialism cares nothing at all for the masses of the world, neither seeking to exploit or eradicate them. But Aryan socialism will not permit the Aryan race to be humiliated and exterminated by the corporate Caesars. Neither will we permit the unwashed third world masses to engulf our lands. There will be a showdown between the forces of Aryan socialism and corporate Caesarism. Corporate Caesarism won the first round in 1945. The next round, the final showdown, will come when the Aryan movement has succeeded in mobilizing the Aryan race in its own defense. Look at Europe today. In Italy, immigrants are being told to get out. France's National Front, Marine Le Pen's party, is winning local elections on an anti-immigration platform. White Canada is waking up to the threat of multiracialism, and multiculturalism is represented to the future of the Aryan racial presence there. In Budapest, thousands of Hungarians demonstrated against the influence of Jews in the Hungarian state television authority. The German Republicans are saying clearly that they have had all they want of the trash refugees that have come in, while Bonn does nothing to stop it. Be sure that a reunified Germany will put an end to the invasion of immigrants from the Third World. We Aryans in the United States have a choice. We can continue to do nothing and see our children and grandchildren dragged down to the level of people of Bangladesh, mixed in the racial crucible and destroyed forever. Or we can start right now by making our racial cause heard. Do not be afraid to be known as a white racist. Do proclaim your racial concerns loudly. This is what it's meant to, what it means to be an Aryan socialist. Caring about the future of our race is what the fight is all about. I have always had of the opinion that all it would take to stop the Jews and their stooges in their track is for enough whites to tell them to stop. Everywhere in Eastern Europe, the Jews are being indicted by the peoples. The old Marxist stooges do not dare oppose the rising tide of anti-Jewish sentiment, even in the USSR. The Pamyat society is able to speak right out against the Jews. They can do it because they dare to do it. But if whites in the USA refuse to speak out, they will continue to be humiliated and ruined as a people. Well, it's too bad a lot of those things that the writer thought was coming true did not come true. Assimilation and race mixing has become worse, and our countries are being drowned in lower races and so forth. So we still haven't done what we should have been doing all along. But the first thing we got to do is boldly say, no, we're not capitalist, we're not Marxist socialist, we're not all these things. We're Aryan socialist, and race is our main situation, and that's it. No other. No Christianity, no Judaism, no Mohammedism, no none of this stuff, no predatory capitalism, only Aryan racialism. And that's what we have to do. Here's another article that's a little older, but it looks good to me. It's called Kosher Cuts. Two or three female journalists are in the lucrative business. Are in the lucrative business of producing syndicated columns that purport to quote letters written by silly women who seek advice about personal problems created by a signal deficiency in common sense. One of the wise women uses a pseudonym, Ann Landers. I have a record of her true name, but I won't waste time looking it up. In a recent column published in the Muskegon Chronicle and doubtless many other newspapers on 12 April 1993, she naturally endorses the sexual mutilation of males that is practiced by many tribes of savages and some barbarians, including her own race, which, according to its holy book, believes that the world was created by Yahweh so the males could be circumcised and would come to an end if males were not sexually mutilated to gratify his ferocious sadism. The Kikas, who does admit in one sentence that some say sexual mutilation is barbaric and unnecessary, contributes on her own the information that uncircumcised males get recurrent urinary tract infections. That no doubt is true. So do great many males who have been mutilated. An ulceration of the urinary tract is especially common in infants who have been mutilated. The central letter comes from a stupid woman whose son explained that he had been dreadfully embarrassed at the gymnasium, where the other boys ridiculed him because he didn't resemble a sheeny. That's a Jew. The stupid youngster, anxious to appear just like the rest of the vulgar herd, demanded to be circumcised. The foolish parents, instead of teaching their son to be an individual with self-respect, consented, although they might have made a weak protest that he wanted to wear a bone in his nose, a fashion not yet promulgated by the school, or become a pervert in keeping with the gospel promulgated in the public boob hatcheries. The circumcision was a very painful operation, and the feeble-minded youngster blamed his parents, not himself, for the pain he had brought upon himself. The moral is, make your son resemble an osteroid or other savage when he is an infant and can't complain about the pain and the probable subsequent deformation of his personality by the traumatic shock inflicted upon him. The piece de la resistance is a letter from old Doc in Kentucky, who doubtless profited for many years from collecting $50 for a single clip. He opines that studies over the past several years have shown that women whose sexual partners have been circumcised tend to have a lower incidence of cervical cancer. The studies are not specified. All such studies are worthless. It's not correlated to race, ethnic group, or social status. Race is different physiologically as well as psychologically. Certain diseases, for example, occur only in Jews, and there is some evidence that Jewesses, who presumably copulate chiefly with males whose foreskins have been sacrificed to the beastly old Yahweh, have a lower incidence of cervical cancer than women of other races. They may also have a higher incidence of uterine cancer, so what of it? According to Ann Landers, several young docs also wrote in to defend and justify a considerable part of their income. Depreciation of the dollar may have increased the once standard fee of $50. No one seems to notice the great intrinsic improbability that mutilation of the penis could biologically affect the vagina. Does it also cause wives to gain or lose weight or to suffer from ingrown toenails? What is important here is to note that the general worthlessness of all statistical proofs that are based on relatively small percentages and a small number of subjects. If 200 or 300 specimens yield a perfect result, i.e. that's 100% or at least 98% of group X show a characteristic that is absent in 100% of group Y. That is noteworthy and calls for duplication and verification. But if group X shows 5% more of the characteristic than group Y, that difference is likely to be aleatory and certainly devoid of validity. When differences of only a few percent are observed in less than 5,000 specimens, the observation is not worth mentioning. Statistical studies of the common type would undoubtedly show that the wives of uncircumcised men get more or fewer permanent waves than other women, eat more and less or less asparagus, see cinemas more or less often, or make more or fewer trips by airplanes. Unfortunately, undoubtedly, more or fewer of such women will be found to have been born under the zodiacal sign of Cancer, and more or fewer of them will be left-handed or golden blonde. Obviously, not even a tentative hypothesis of a casual relationship can be based on such evidence. It is only prudent to suspect all statistics of social import. If they favor liberal or Marxist purposes, they are likely to be as fraudulent as the study by which the Rockefeller Foundation promoted male homosexuality. The finding that 10% of all males, race unstated, were perverts was accepted for almost half a century until Kinsey's statistics were shown to have been rigged and were flagrantly dishonest. Now, despite all the intensive efforts of the public schools in the meantime, recent surveys put the number of perverts at 1% or something between 1% and 2%. Why was the truth not ascertained by the independent investigation 45 years ago, when it would have done some good? Was there some clandestine power that forbade such investigation? Or were all the social scientists childish and irredeemably gullible? Remember that the federal government has many squads of trained statisticians who will prove anything at the drop of a hat or a nod from their paymasters. You should not be surprised by the recent issues of criminal politics, which show that economic and financial statistics are being systematically falsified. The same is doubtless true in the current hullabaloo about cigarettes, obviously designed to keep them dimwits of the general public so occupied with fictitious crusades that they will not perceive what is being done to them until it's too late. If the statistics are not faked, remember that small percentages, except in very large numbers, 10,000 is a minimum, have no probative value whatsoever. For example, no one should have even noticed Dr. Rhine's famous proofs of extrasensory perception. As I pointed out in Is There Intelligent Life on Earth, page 29 to 39, what Rhine's data really proved was that if there are persons endowed with extrasensory perception, he had encountered none of them. Ann Landers' propaganda gives you an opportunity to notice what is much more important, the fallacious nature of most studies about matters of social importance. Do not, however, blame her for her deceptive column. She is loyal to her race. Let us hope that you and I are as loyal to ours. Talking about Ann Landers as a Jew. Of course, so is their sister that writes the same dribble. Well, that's about it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow, but I'm not sure exactly what we're going to run tomorrow. I have to make a trip someplace, but you'll get a show, that's for sure. 14-5, and I have nothing to say. Don't forget it.
If you'll gather around and me children a story I will tell. About pretty boy Floyd, an outlaw, Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in his wagon as into town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him in a manner rather rude. Vulgar words of anger and his wife she overheard. Pretty boy grabbed a log chain and the deputy grabbed his gun. In the fight that followed he laid that deputy down. Then he took to the trees and timber to live a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was added to his name. But a many a starving farmer the same old story told. How the outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little homes. Others tell you about a stranger that come to beg a meal. Underneath his napkin left a $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City. It was on a Christmas day. There was a whole carload of groceries come with a note to say. Well, you say that I'm an outlaw. You say that I'm a thief. Here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Guess it's through this world I've wandered. I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a 6-gun and some with a fountain pen. And as through your life you travel, yes, as through your life you roam, you will never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.